it's only fitting it ends like that. Tim Anderson, who kept the game alive with his defensive heroics in the top of the ninth, ends it with his offensive heroics in the bottom of the ninth.
Jason Benetti and Steve Stone on the call there. The White Sox are loaded with good young talent, and now they have a veteran manager who's the third winningest of all time. But there is a large chunk of the fan base, I'm not saying everybody, but a large chunk of the fan base are not happy with the hire. Steve Stone has pitched on both sides of town, has broadcasted on both sides of town. He's our dear friend, and he joins us now. Stoney, good morning. There is a large chunk of the fan base that is not happy with this hiring. What is your perspective from your seat with Tony La Russa, now the man in charge?
Well, David, first of all, hi, Jay. How are you?
Well.
You know, it was an interesting day yesterday, and it's been interesting for the past maybe week. It started to leak out that Tony La Russa would be considered, and there were a lot of people who were very much against that move. But the same people who were against that move were against some of the other names that were also floated out there. I mean, taking a look at Twitter and participating in Twitter almost on a daily basis, everybody had complaints about everybody. Whether it's, well, you can't hire this guy because they were cheaters, you can't hire this guy because he has no experience, you can't hire this guy because of you can fill in the blank after that. So one of the things that I talked about was the fact that there was no perfect candidate out there, not a one. And everybody would be complaining about whoever it was that was named. But I think when you take a look at who was available, there was a couple names that came to mind. Bruce Bochy was one of those guys who certainly had a lot of experience and was a winner in that San Francisco dugout three different times, I think. And then Tony La Russa, who was four-time manager of the year, had won three World Series. And so Tony, number one, was familiar with Chicago. Number two, I was actually on the 78 team when Tony came up as a coach. And I got a chance to talk with him about some of his philosophies. And I really liked what he had to say then. And bear in mind, he hadn't been a major league manager at all at that point. But I said, well, talk to me a little bit about your philosophies. And he said, you know what? I can't really tell you a whole lot of things because I might want to manage one day and you might be managing against me. I said, well, tell me one, just one. He said, I try to get my guys prepared to win the seventh, eighth, and ninth inning. He said, regardless of what they do in the first six, if I can prepare them and explain to them the importance of winning the seventh, eighth, and ninth inning, he said, we're going to win more than we lose. And obviously, as you know, Tony won considerably more than he lost. I think those who criticize him for being away from the game since 2011, as far as the dugout is concerned, don't realize that one of the things you never forget is how to manage. I mean, the man's in the Hall of Fame. He's not going to forget how to manage. And then everybody is concerned, well, he won't be able to relate to the younger players. And I remember talking with Bobby Cox after he'd retired. And I said to him, this was at an Arizona Fall League game. I sat down and I wanted to pick his brain about what he thought, what he did, how he did it. And I said, you know, there's a lot of people say that you can't manage today like you managed when you were in that dugout for the Braves. And he said, that's a bunch of crap. He said, you lay down a few rules, not many, and your players adhere to those rules. He said, you have to have discipline on a team. Without discipline, you don't have anything. Without discipline, when it really gets tough, they're not going to be able to perform. I think Tony's going to relate very well to these younger players because, truly, he's never really left the game entirely. If you watch what he's done since he retired till where he is at this point, he's always stayed connected with the game in a front office capacity, whether it's a hands-on architect of an organization like with the Diamondbacks, whether it was a senior advisor like the Red Sox or the Angels, he's been around. He's also seen what it's like as these younger players have come up. And Tony's going to bring a different perspective. You know, he's an enormously smart guy. And I think he's going to realize that what he did, number one, with the White Sox when he was there, what he did with Oakland when he was there, what he did with St. Louis when he was there, he's not going to be able to do now. He'll take forward some of it, the best parts of it, but he's going to adjust, and I don't see any problems, to be honest with you.
Steve, how surprised were you of the hire? When you first heard the name, what was going through your mind?
when I first heard the name, I literally thought that Jerry Reinsdorf and company wanted to get his name out there to increase his visibility in case he wanted to come back. I was speculating because of his association with Dave Dombrowski, they might go after either an expansion team or a relocation team, or I thought that was a possibility. Or if Dave Dombrowski had gotten the job, and he still might, running a baseball team, maybe Tony would come along there because of their association. And then I started to read a little bit more and started to think about it. And, you know, there's so many people that want to look at the downside of everything. There's going to be ample time for disenchanted White Sox fans to complain about this hire. But odds are overwhelming with a good young team, which, by the way, is not a finished product. This team, as it came out of last year, was not ready to win a World Series quite yet. I think a lot of the deficiencies showed up. And with the additions that are going to be added this offseason, I think with Tony at the helm, they could be ready to take the next step. I think they're going to be ready to take the next step, depending on who they acquire. But I do know one thing with Tony in the dugout, and there's a lot of people that don't believe this, but I will pretty much guarantee you this. This team this year, unlike at times in the last couple of years, this team will not be outmanaged by anybody in the opposing dugout. They are going to lose games. They're going to lose, hopefully not a whole lot of them, but they'll lose games. They just won't be outmanaged in the losing process.
Are you surprised by the level of negativity from, and I'm not saying every Sox fan, please don't misunderstand, but there is a very vocal group of fans that are so down on this hire. Does it surprise you?
It really doesn't, because I remember reading at the time, David, I think you remember that year. Was it 2003 that comes to mind? They put a 72-year-old guy at the time who was in much worse shape than Tony La Russa. They put him into that dugout in the middle of the year. I can't remember really what happened to that team. I think they went on to do some really good things. Was it the Marlin team that won the World Series in 2003? Did they knock out the Cubs with Jack McKean in that dugout? What happened.
Yep.
So at any rate, yeah, I think you can bring a guy back to the game who hasn't managed in a while if he understands how to manage. And a four-time manager of the year who won three World Series, one in the American League, two in the National League, and had his team to the playoffs quite a bit, don't think that he forgets how to do that. And so, you know, there's a lot of people, one of the big things as well, when Tim flips his bat, well, what's going to happen? I mean, geez, the world is going to come to an end when Tim Anderson flips his bat. Well, do they remember Ricky Henderson? Did he flip his bat? Who was in that dugout? Well, it was Tony La Russa. And it was a different generation of player. And Tony still said, well, you know what? Flip your bat. Enjoy yourself. Have a good time. And I'm not saying that he doesn't have some ideas that were honed over the years that might fly in the face of what's happening today. But Tony's a smart guy. He understands that it's not 2011. He'll take the best of what he was, add it to the best of what he will be, and together with a very talented young team who's on the precipice of putting together something special, I think at this point, he's one of the guys. And I'm not saying that he's the only guy, but he's certainly one of the guys that can lead this team to win a World Series. And I think that went into it. Look, he's very good friends with Jerry Reinsdorf, but if Jerry thought for a minute that either one, Tony couldn't do it, or Tony was too old to do it, or Tony wasn't capable of doing it, I don't care. I don't care how good Tony was. I don't think Jerry would have gone out and said, you know what, this could very well be my last hurrah as an owner these next 5 years. So I'm going to bring in some guy that has no chance of winning. I don't think Jerry felt that way. I think Jerry desperately wants to win one more World Series before it's over for him. And he thinks in his heart of hearts that Tony La Russa is the guy.
Steve, because the La Russa has been a Hall of Famer, because he's been there and done that as a manager, I'm wondering with this opportunity to manage once again, does he manage the way he's always managed, or does he do something a little bit differently, like adding analytics to his gut feeling for the game?
Well, first of all, Jay, as we all know that you're in the media, you've been in the media for quite some time. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure as a product of the experiences you brought forward and things that you've seen as far as the media changing, I'm sure you're a different broadcaster, a different analyst of the game, a different personality now than you were, say, 9, 10 years ago. I think we all are. I'm a different broadcaster now than I was 10 years ago because things change. And I think if you're good at what you do, you change with them. I don't think Tony has a one-size-fits-all, because if you look at the diverse personalities that he dealt with, you'll realize that they were equally as, in some cases, controversial, in some cases talented, if in some cases they were not easy to handle, and Tony handled them all at that point. I think being around the game as much as he has, and he has seen the transition from 10 years ago's player to today's player, I think he's going to be smart enough to be able to adjust. I don't say that he changes everything that he did, because a lot of the things that he did still hold up. But he is going to change a bit in his dealings. And everybody that I've dealt with that had Tony as a manager or had dealings with him as an advisor and a front office guy, they all sing his praises. They think that he's a vast reservoir of baseball knowledge. He's only going to be a plus for this team. And look, if this doesn't work out in a couple of years, I think it will, don't get me wrong. But if it doesn't work out in a couple of years, you move on to somebody else. This is not a two-year window or a year window. They have a lot of talented guys. They're going to be good for quite some time. And, you know, they're going to have to be expected to beat A.J. Hinch, who apparently is going to go to the Tigers.
We're talking to Steve Stone here on the Cap J Hood Show on ESPN 1000. Steve, the players that I spoke to yesterday about Tony all said he commands immediate respect the first day you walk in, but that the perception that he's going to take all the fun out of it, that he is out of touch with the modern player, they believe that is a media-driven creation. They said he simply, every day, tries to put you in the best possible position to win a baseball game. Do you think that because we're in a different place in our society, everything is different today, where everyone's much more woke and everyone is much more about different things, that Tony can adjust some of the things he may have been hardline about to mesh with whoever it is, Latin players, black players, white players?
I think if you're an aware individual, and I think Tony is, and I think if you're a talented individual, and I know Tony is that, I believe that you're going to adjust to the circumstances that surround you at any given time. I don't think anybody who is really good at what they do has a one-size-fits-all approach to, in this case, managing a baseball team. I think he's going to realize that there's some different backgrounds of the guys that he's managing now than the guys that he was managing when he was good enough to be put into the Hall of Fame. So I don't doubt for 1 minute that he's going to make some adjustments to the way he handles people, the way he handles certain situations. But understand something. When you've had the success that he's had, and you've been given a lot of diverse teams, I mean, he had a team in Oakland where they just hit everything out of the ballpark. He had teams in St. Louis where they had to finesse a lot of those wins. I mean, he presided over a team that won 83 games. Wasn't that him? Won 83 games and then won the World Series. They were probably the 7th or 8th best team in baseball at the time, and then they won the World Series. I think it was the 2006 team. I'm not sure exactly. But I think that he can adjust to whatever is put in front of him, and I think that he will. I think he's going to go in. I have a feeling, and this would be something that I would do, and I'm pretty sure he's going to do it. I think he's going to talk to a lot of these guys during the wintertime. I think he's going to talk to them, and I think he's going to talk to everybody involved in the front office with the White Sox. I think he's going to get a really good feel for how things went, the good things they want to bring forward, the bad things they want to leave behind. I think he wants to get a sense of the personality of these guys. I wouldn't be surprised if each and every one of the guys that for sure are coming back next year have a conversation or two with Tony La Russa over the wintertime. He's going to explain to them what he would like them to do going forward, how he wants them to report to spring training, the attitude that he would like to see them go out and exhibit. And I have a feeling that communication is not going to be his problem. I mean, all I heard, people were up in arms. How is he going to relate to all of these young guys who speak Spanish, all of these guys coming from Cuba, all these guys coming from Dominican? Well, he does speak Spanish. He speaks it rather well, as a matter of fact. And so I don't think he's going to have any problem whatsoever. I honestly believe that he checks a whole lot of the boxes that the front office of the White Sox, along with Jerry Reinsdorf, wanted. And I just don't see any real difficult times. I think the people that are complaining, David, what I urge them is, especially the ones who are complaining vehemently, I said, well, then you better make sure that you don't celebrate when this team wins the World Series, because you don't want your friends to realize what a hypocrite you really are. So stand your ground. Make sure that you don't celebrate. Make sure you're not happy when the guy you absolutely do not want managing this team eventually wins, which is something that he's pretty much done wherever he's gone. I mean, those people remember when Tony was a manager with the White Sox, and I remember when he came up from his minor league experience. You know, he was one of those guys that wasn't a star when he played, but he had to be much more observant about the nature of the game of baseball because he wasn't great. Because he was a middle-of-the-road, middle infielder, and I think he understood how difficult this game is. I think he still understands that. I think he's going to relate to players very well.
Steve, do you foresee the White Sox hiring from within or outside the organization for a bench coach or a pitching coach? You know, the bench coach, Cap, you know, for years was always that sage old-timer that's been there and seen everything. Well, that's Tony. He's seen everything, so I don't know. He doesn't need anyone older than him to kind of see the game. Steve, how do you see that? Because there's some openings there for the staff for La Russa.
Well, first of all, you know, Connie Mack is gone. We can't bring him in.
Right.
Yeah, you know, I think they kicked the tires on Buddy Ebsen, but they realized that he passed away. So, look, they're not going to bring in anybody older. We pretty much know that.
Yeah.
I think Tony's going to have a say-so in a few of these coaches. I don't think he's going to be be hiring an entire coaching staff. But I would like to see him bring in guys. And I think Tony's going to sit back and he's going to realize, yeah, I mean, he had some guys before. Maybe he brings one of them with him, whoever that might be. And then he realizes that he's going to need a couple of people there that are going to be able to relate to the guys who are currently there. So, yeah, you're right. He is the guy who's been around. He doesn't need an experienced bench coach to tell him when to take out the right fielder or when to platoon or do any of those other things. And I think one of the things that was addressed when they talked with Tony was the new reliance on analytics. And I think Tony, who pretty much was one of those guys who was accused of being too revolutionary for his time, I think Tony thought about analytics a long time before it became mainstream. I think Tony understood that there were different ways to be able to get the best out of your ball club and the best out of individual talent before everybody realized that this was going to be an industry-wide trend. So I look for him to hire guys that he believes are going to help this winning effort and blend them in to give advice, to teach these young guys. I think that's important on your coaching staff. I think each and every one of the coaches that you hire and each and every one of the guys you bring forward from the old administration, they have to be able to teach the game of baseball, because more than ever, you're getting a lot of young players coming to the game that are very talented. You know, don't mistake me for being one of those guys who say, oh, the game was back, it was so much better back then. I believe the athletes today are bigger, stronger, faster, and quicker than ever. I think we see it on a daily basis. These guys are off the charts better athletically than the guys who came two, three, four generations before them, because they are a product of better training, of better nutrition, of better everything. We understand performance now better than we ever have before. But still, the tenets of the game of baseball are still the tenets of the game of baseball. And one of the things that I loved about the Los Angeles Dodger team was that if they needed to lay down a bunt, they got it down. If they needed to try to find a hole in a defensive alignment, they found that hole. Will Smith punched one through the right side, scored a couple of runs, big play in the game. Because they overshifted to the left against him. I think Tony's going to understand how to make each and every one of his players take advantage of what this game gives you. And what you need to win with this era of player. I think that this is going to be a more well-schooled team. I think this is going to be a team that hits the cutoff man. I think this is going to be a team that runs the bases pretty well. I think this is going to be a team that understands rundowns and doesn't take five throws to get somebody out. I think this is going to be a team that understands situational hitting and actually practices it. I think this is a team that if occasionally you need a bunt, and bear in mind, Tony is not going to bunt like he used to. Different era of baseball. Analytics prove that excess bunting isn't a good thing. So I don't think he's going to do that a lot. But I do believe that this team is going to be well-schooled, and I think this is going to be a team, like so many of the great teams, that will take the game away in the 7th, 8th, and 9th inning, not give the game away in the 7th, 8th, and 9th inning. And I think that Ricky Renteria had a couple of things that were really good. I think, one, this team played hard for him. I think they played hard every day for him. And, two, I think he established a culture with this team that's probably going to be brought forward and hold up. I think the problems that Ricky encountered were mostly in-game managerial strategy type things, certainly the handling of the pitching staff and the bullpen and what to do and when to do it. I think that things that won't elude Tony did elude Ricky at times. And so I think that this team's going to take all the best of what Ricky Renteria laid down for 4 years, bring it forward, adding the things that Tony La Russa understands innately, and I think it's going to be a championship group.
Light a candle tonight to make sure Cordero's arm is ready for next year. I'm hoping the swelling has gone down. Hopefully he's okay, Cap.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my God.
Stoney, thank you for your time, man. Really appreciate it. You know what a huge fan of yours that we are, so thank you again.
Well, guys, have a good rest of the show. I think there's bright times ahead for the White Sox, and I think that, as I say, there are a few guys that probably could have gotten the job done, but I think Tony is probably the best of the bunch. You look at his credentials, they're impeccable. And for everybody who doesn't believe that he can manage in 2021, they're dead wrong.
Appreciate it, man. Talk to you over the weekend.
Take care, guys.
See ya. There he is, Steve Stone. So Sox fans,
are we doing a weekend show together?
Absolutely.
Oh, I didn't know.
We're in here Saturday and Sunday.
And we have Stone again over the weekend?
No question.
Okay. What?
Sox fans, how did you wake up today? Feeling a little better? Still upset. Be right back.
Cap. J-Hood.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Watch the show on Twitch. Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago.
Yeah.
Thank you again to Steve Stone for joining us on the show. 312-332-3776. We will be talking a bunch of Bears in a little bit, but we have so many callers that still want to give their thoughts. So how about we go to Henry downtown? We'll start in the downtown area. Henry, what's up, Sparkles?
Well, first of all, I woke up this morning and found out Tony La Russa is the new manager of the White Sox. First thought hit my mind, 2021, I'll be at a World Series championship game.
Yeah, who's playing?
Tony's forgotten more baseball than most people ever have in their life. We obviously have the best manager in the Central, the best manager in the American League, and arguably the best manager in baseball. Now that we done spent the money to get Tony La Russa, because I'm sure he didn't come for free. I know Jerry Reinsdorf probably went back behind the safe that has the show money in it and pulled back that real money. Now we going out. George Springer don't want to go to Houston. Hey, Chicago's a big city. We got room for him. Pitchers, we got. I'm sure there's money there for those too. We're going to win this. And we're going to spend big money. That's what I get.
All right, my friend.
Thank you for the call, Henry. Look, I say this as I cheer for both teams in town. I've been clear about that, but that I'm a Cubs guy. That is my team. I'm just telling you, I truly look at your team and believe you got better in the dugout markedly. And I believe before Tony rides off into the sunset, You, my friend, will come in here with a bottle of Crown going, holy cow, we won the World Series. I truly believe it.
Your lips to God's ears. I'll tell you what, but as Steve Stone mentioned in our previous segment, Sox are not done. You like what they have, that the Sox have offensively, but you still got to be able to take care of your starting pitching. Now, maybe your starting pitching is on the roster. Mm-hmm. I think not. I think you need to add one more, and then you take a look at the kids and decide, is Cease or Dunning one your fifth starter or fourth starter?
And you always need depth moves. Always. We saw insane amounts of injuries this year to pitchers because mm-hmm. they had a shorter spring training, the pandemic, everything that played into this crazy season. But we're already hearing next year won't be 162 games.
That's fine with me. And keep in mind, this morning, you can't fight City Hall. La Russa is the manager. What am I going to do, kick and scream and just say I'm not going to be a Sox fan anymore? No. No, because I really feel strongly about the core. That's number one. But I just feel badly for Han because Han was able to build up to this point, and Jerry says, no, I'm going to bring in my guy. And I think that that's the thing that's troublesome the most. I mean, you've already talked about it. Usually Jerry would say, okay, whatever you say, because I hired you to do a job. Mm-hmm. But Jerry said, no, this will be on me. And I find that troublesome because that makes Rick look bad, right? Say if it doesn't work, who's Jerry? Why did you bring in La Russa? And Rick's like, you brought in La Russa. Right. You're fired. Right. like, you know, this is all on Jerry. Hopefully the move works. That's the hope. And
well,
thank goodness the core is young enough where the window's open, Cap, for championships of some sort.
Yep, and I'm saying this not because I want to go, hey, I told you. I truly believe you've got a phenomenal tactician in that dugout, and the people that I trust that I've asked in St. Louis that rave about his communication skills, I truly look at your team and think, wow, you have got a Hall of Fame manager, the third winningest of all time, and you got a ton of talent. And I think you're going to win the World Series at some point.
Danny,
let
this be Jack McKeon and not Lou Piniella.
Oh, for your sake, I hope it's not Lou Piniella. I just want to know from Cap, how's this different? You railed against John Fox taking a golden parachute on this station for a long, long time. How is what Tony La Russa is doing any different than just grabbing the golden parachute?
Are you serious?
Yeah, I am serious.
John Fox never won a Super Bowl. John Fox...
I'm not asking his resume. I'm talking about taking the money to take another job. Like, you rallied against John Fox just going for the golden parachute on his way out. I mm-hmm. get it. Tony La Russa's accomplished a lot more. That was over a decade ago. Like, we've talked about all the reasons why it doesn't make sense for the Sox.
Uh-huh.
So, like, how is this not just a money grab for him?
Because he and Jerry have an incredible relationship. He's been a member of the White Sox before.
Oh, but none of that has anything to do with right now, 2020.
I disagree. John Fox would have gone to the Whites. I mean,
Bears. You could have called 55 Broncos players that would have said he was a great guy and a great manager and vouched for him, just like you're calling guys that played for Tony La Russa.
I don't think Tony takes the Mariners job if they offer it. John Fox would have taken any job. He just wanted to coach ball and cash a check.
According to Jeff Passan, this was the only job being offered to Tony La Russa. He would have taken any job if he got other offers.
I don't believe that. I believe he would not have taken any job other than this job. Well, that's it.
But this was the only one that he was going to get.
But it doesn't matter. He only needed
one.
So,
but you can't have that conversation. If he turned down the Angels job, if he turned down the Texans job, if he turned down 100 other jobs in baseball, then you can say that. No, according to Jeff Passan, who's as tapped in as anybody, nobody else was offering him another job.
He was not the hot name for anybody. He wasn't the hot name for the White Sox until his name just came across. He was not the hot name.
It just seems like it seems, and I'm a Cub fan, but from the outside looking in, it seems like Tony La Russa's in this for Tony La Russa, not necessarily for the White Sox.
Yeah, I disagree with that perspective. I actually think the White Sox got markedly better, and they are going to be amazing. I do. I truly believe that.
Could they be amazing without La Russa? I think so. Look at the core. Yeah, see, it's got to be more than the manager. You look at that roster, and you say, and if as a Cub fan, you trade that our roster for yours
tonight,
right?
That's done.
Ultimately, that's the point.
Would they have been better with AJ Hinch?
I have said, and I'm just so we're clear. I have said multiple times he deserves a second chance. I believe in second chances.
Absolutely.
For people.
Forget the cheating, though. Would they? I mean, he's probably in today's game a better manager. They would have probably been better.
I don't know if I agree with that. I don't know if I agree that he's a better manager. I don't agree with that.
We'll keep our eyes on the Tigers the next 5 years.
Yeah, see how it
does. As they rebuild from the bottom.
Yeah, they are at the bottom. So, no question. 312-332-3776. We will move to the Bears next. What do we need to see out of the Bears Sunday in order for them to beat the New Orleans Saints? We'll give you our five things. What do you need to see? That is next.
David Kaplan.
Jonathan Hood.
Our new morning show. This is Cap and Jay Hood.
On ESPN 1000.
And the ESPN Chicago app.
Okay, so we've talked a bunch about Tony La Russa. Let's move on to some football, because it is a football Friday, my friend Jonathan. And it's Bears and Saints on the lakefront. And, you know, the weather forecast is going to be 40 degrees and exceptionally windy. Exceptionally windy. Now, if you told me the Bears were 100% healthy, I think it's a decent spot for them. I didn't say great spot, but decent spot. But Khalil, banged up, got an ankle, got a back. Don't think Cody Whitehair is going to play. Allen Robinson still in the concussion protocol. Not sure he's going to play. And if Cody Whitehair doesn't play, you've got a new center in Sam Mustafa. How's that going to work out? And then you add in the wind and everything else, which our passing game isn't anything to write home about anyway. So give me the number one thing on your list, JH, that you think, if they do that, that's the most important thing.
Add protection for Foles. Add protection for Foles. It's more than just the offensive line, the rickety offensive line that the Bears have to deal with. I agree with Howard Griffith, who was on with us yesterday, by adding a few other wrinkles to the offensive line, meaning that why not Ryan Nall? Why not Harris, someone else to be able to help block, to give Foles some time to throw.
Like a fullback spot.
Something like that, or a tight end to be able to just be an extra blocker in there to give Foles time to be able to connect to his receivers. The idea that you could just go out there, Cap, and just have your normal offensive lineman, no matter who it is, whether Whitehair is not going to play or if he plays. Point is, though, is that clearly the offensive line needs help. Give them the help that they need. So that way Mooney can make those catches. So it's a clear, clean pass to Mooney. A couple of those shots were missed in the Rams game. How about connecting on them coming up on Sunday?
For me, the number one thing is you have to get off to a quick start. You have to. If you look up, go three and out, and or they get the opening kick and they go right down the field and it's 7-0, and then you go three and out, and then they come back down and score again, for me, the ball game's over.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't the Falcons. This isn't a dome where you're playing in where it's climate controlled and we relax and we can hit our routes. This is going to be cold, windy, Soldier Field, and it's going to be a battle to complete passes.
Yeah, and the same thing for Breeze, too. Those dying ducks that he throws out there on a regular basis be difficult for him as well.
No question, but then they hand the ball to Alvin Kamara, and he gets chunks.
Yeah, well, that's next on my list, is to be disciplined defensively. DD, disciplined defensively. Yeah, just make sure that you're in your gap. You know, make sure that you have that type of gap discipline to make sure that you're not going to stop the run. Slow it.
Mm-hmm.
Slow down the run. Make it a game in which Breeze has to win it with his arm. See if he could do that. Don't know if he could do that in his advanced stage. He's still very good now.
Mm-hmm.
But you have an opportunistic secondary that can make a difference for the Bears team.
Yeah, my second one on defense is very similar to yours. For me, it is stay loyal to your lanes. Because if you can slow him, you're not going to stop Alvin Kamara. He's a beast. But if you can slow Alvin Kamara, you have an opportunity then, if you get them in 3rd and 6, 3rd and 7, 3rd and 8, you might be able to get home and tee off on Drew Brees. You might.
Even more so than Kamara, watch out for Taysom Hill in that same regard, too.
Yeah.
That guy does everything. He does special teams. He can run the football. He can pass the football. He can be a wide receiver. Just be cognizant of the fact that when 7's out there, because they'll call him 7, when number 7's out there, he can do a lot of damage.
No question.
And that's why they kind of run this college system. Like, you'll see Breeze out there for a couple of downs. All of a sudden, here comes seven. Like, wait a minute. Where did Breeze go?
Right.
Is he lining up as a wide receiver? Is he on the sidelines? It's just hopefully the defense understands, like, a lot of moving parts with the Saints team now. Make sure you keep your eyes open. They do a lot of trickeration.
Yeah, he's their Cordero Patterson.
He's better than that.
Yeah, way better.
He's better than that.
Way better. Nick in Norridge, 312-332-3776. What do you all need to see? Give us one thing that you have to see to be able to feel like we got a shot on Sunday. Nick, what do you think, kid?
We have to be balanced. And by balanced, I mean the first couple weeks with Mitch Trubisky, they were running things behind the center, not all shotgun. Since Foles has come in, he is a better passer. He does read things better. But if everything's from shotgun, the defensive line never guesses to defend the run. All they do is pin their ears back and attack. And our offensive line plays worse when that happens, and everything just falls apart at the seam. So Matt Nagy just needs to not be you, be smart, and don't be so predictable, because it's too easy for the defense.
Appreciate you, Nick. Thanks for the perspective.
I love that. That's my fifth. I'm going to skip a couple, but that's my fifth one, is be more than you. Being you clearly is not good enough offensively. If you continue to just be you, you'll continue to underachieve offensively. Be more than you.
How about be what's best for us? Be what's best for us.
Yes.
May not be you, but what's best for the group.
He always talks about how we like that play. We really like that 4th-and-1 play. You like that play. No, you liked it. I don't think that everyone signed off on that. You know what? Cordell Patterson's such a dynamic guy in the off. Let's put him in there. You believe that. Be more than you. Be us.
Be us.
It's not about you. It's about us.
Be what's best for us. All right, Halloween is tomorrow. How we plan on enjoying that day, next.
Check that.
This is Cap and J Hood. Enjoy the show each morning in your Instagrammies at Cap J Hood on Instagram.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
ESPN 1000.
Welcome back on Cap J Hood on ESPN 1000. With Hoodie, I'm Cap. So Halloween is tomorrow.
It is.
My wife is actually on her... Well, she's probably already there. She's fishing for the next 2 days. Like, don't... Isn't it a normal relationship? The guy goes on the fishing trip?
Yes.
Yeah.
She's, hello, Archie Bunker.
Not being Archie Bunker.
Dude, that was the most Archie Bunker. Normally, the guy goes fishing. Why? Only guys like the hobby of fishing?
I didn't say that.
Edith!
In my house... She's gone hunting. She's gone fishing. I don't do any of it. And I actually went with her this summer with her dad, and I had a good time. I caught a fish. I had fun. But
what's wrong with you, Bunker? What's the matter? Jefferson there. The wife's gone fishing, hunting there. I don't know what's going on with this country there. I don't know what you people do, but does your wife go fishing there?
She loves it.
Oh, jeez.
So I am going to be the one that will be at home handling trick-or-treaters.
Next thing you know, she'll be wearing pants there, Jefferson. What are we going to do? Would you like a beer? Who's going to give me a beer? She's not around. Who's going to give me a beer? I guess I'll go get myself a beer. Meathead.
So are you going to be handling trick-or-treaters?
They don't come around.
Not at all?
Mm-mm. Yeah, you know, when you live in pretty much a retirement community, like even the grandkids, especially during COVID, you know that they're not coming around. And I have not answered the door for a trick-or-treater in at least 5 years. No one rings the bell.
So if the bell rang, will you have candy ready for them?
There's something around there. We'll find something. Or pennies. We'll throw something in there.
All right.
A roll of pennies.
Wow.
What?
People used to do that.
Yeah.
They don't do it anymore. we were kids.
You still get the random change.
Yeah.
We got it last year. My kids got the random change.
Helps the economy.
Mellor, will you be handling that duty? Will you be your wife? Will you just put a bowl out front because you don't want to interact with people during a pandemic? How you handle it?
I always put out a dish. Big bag of candy inside the dish and let people come by. I don't want to answer the door.
Danny?
I thought you were throwing like stuffing, a little turkey.
Mm, no. Big dish of candy.
Okay.
In a normal year, we like when people ring the bell. My kids get excited. The kids ring the bell. My kids run to see the costumes. They put the candy in the bag. It's a feel-good moment. This year, because of the pandemic, we don't want to really go near people. So we're going to put the bowl out on the front porch, and people can help themselves to whatever they want. We just don't want to interact with people.
Yeah, I don't, Cap, it's just something about my neighborhood where everyone's either retired or an adult. And their kids are away. Like, there's no really small kids in the area that I live in. So it's been 5 years since we answered the door for Halloween. And during this time, I'm not sure that I would. Now, here's the issue with you. So you have some kind of issue with Reese's peanut butter cups?
Yeah, I can't stand them. I think they're awful.
Are you negative against peanut butter or just the peanut butter cups?
Just the peanut butter cups. I'll eat peanut butter. Like, I have this keto bread.
Yeah.
It's not the greatest, but it's keto bread. And I'll put the peanut butter and a sugar-free jelly on there and have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Great. The Reese's peanut butter cup, I don't like it. I think it's awful.
How about candy corn?
Ugh. That is literally like eating a broken up piece of candle.
So worse than the Reese's?
Yes.
Okay.
Like, I love chocolate. I could deal with the Reese's. Not a big fan. Candy corn? That's disgusting.
And you don't mind the Swedish fish?
They're okay, yeah.
Jolly Ranchers?
No.
What's wrong with them?
It's soury, like hard candy. No, I'm not a hard candy guy.
So you like something soft, like a Starburst?
No, I like chocolate. Just give me chocolate.
Well, that's apparent.
Chocolate with no peanut butter, though.
Correct. Give me a $100,000 bar, the 100 grand bar they now call it. Give me a Whatchamacallit bar is pretty solid. Give me a Hershey's bar, a Nestle Crunch bar, Rolo.
Whatchamacallit's still in the neighborhood?
They are.
Oh. Yeah, what's that like?
I'll bring you
You can't get a Whatchamacallit in South Shore?
No. No, if it is, it's like on the bottom shelf. I don't see it. I don't think that's what's happening today. Like, when we were kids, I think that was pretty popular. I remember that in the 80s. Remember that, Danny?
Yeah.
Whatchamacallit when it first came out?
I loved it.
Yeah, I don't know if that's around as much. I think that might be in the bottom shelf or not at all in South Shore.
What about a Charleston Chew?
Great.
Hoodie, can you get a Charleston Chew where you're at?
I don't know, man. I don't like how it's wrapped in that Confederate flag.
Yeah, that's true.
Good point. Wow. Nothing's better than a frozen Snicker. You ever put a Snickers in the freezer?
Yes. I like Snickers in the freezer. I like Charleston Chews in the freezer.
Of course you do.
I like Twix.
Twix is good. So you don't mind Twix?
I don't mind Twix.
I'm a Twix guy.
Twix is good. Rolo.
Swedish fish. I'm a big fan.
Swedish fish are good?
Yeah. Yeah.
You think Tony Lutris is handing out Charleston shoes?
Eat this, Tim. Eat this, Tim. What's that about? Why has gotta be from Charleston? They're not from Charleston. Yes, they are.
That's the name of it.
Yeah. I don't like that. How about Skittles? I like the variety.
Derrick Rowe is a huge Skittles guy.
Oh, yes. Yes, he
is. He had a Skittles machine they put in his house.
I love Derrick. Derrick, what are you going to miss most about Luol Deng? I just liked how he would always make the peanut butter and jelly sandwiches at halftime. Good protein, though. What? Derrick's funny,
fact that
man.
He averaged 19 a game, that didn't factor in at all.
Oh, man. He made a killer peanut butter and jelly sandwich, though. What? Derrick's funny. Derrick is funny. He was just, like, you'd say it with a straight face, though. Just like, he was a very funny guy.
So if I took you after the show, we walked across the street to Walgreens.
Yeah.
And I said, Hoodie, pick the two things off the candy aisle that you most want to eat right now. What would they be?
Twix and the Reese's little cups.
Mallor?
I don't know. I mean,
come on, man. It's candy.
I know. I don't know if I have a favorite. Like,
Carm.
It's a variety thing. Like one day I could go for a nice bag of jelly bellies, you know?
Oh, that's good.
Those are gourmet jelly bean.
It's a gourmet jelly bean.
It is. It tells you it's a gourmet jelly bean. But they don't hand those out for Halloween.
The jelly belly for the rich.
Yes.
That is true.
Danny?
For me, it's easy. I'm going to go Reese's peanut butter cups. Those are my favorite. By the way, peanut butter is not a nut. A peanut is not a nut. It's a legume, like a pea.
It's a what?
It's a legume, like a pea.
You do, and you clean it up.
Yeah, correct. I would go Reese's peanut butter cups, and I would probably either go one of three. Baby Ruth, Almond Joy, or peanut M&Ms.
Almond Joy is very good.
Yeah. I don't like Mounds. It has to have the almond.
Not a coconut guy.
Oh, coconut.
Yeah,
coconut.
I love coconut.
Not in any way.
I could go Mounds, too.
I love Miller's impersonation of Carm, though. It's just candy.
It's candy.
I'm a big fan of candy. It's hard to pick.
I mean, I don't know.
Many good ones.
I'm a blow pop guy. Or Swedish candy.
Blow charms.
You know, Swedish fish. Yeah,
no, Swedish fish.
Spice drops. I don't know. I mean, Butterfinger. You know, Butterfingers are good. I mean, don't get me wrong, but.